Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. The soybeans rallied for the week. The corn fell just a bit. We'll try to find out all of that today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our panelists today in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Champaign County, and Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Really, why did beans post a 15-cent rally Friday? Paul Cooley.
Hi, Todd. I wanted to also mention that any of my views here are ADM, not ADMs or ADM investors, but Paul Cooley's. And I tell you what, a couple of things. Number one, we did get a drier forecast overnight. And there is just general feeling if we do get somewhere in that 8 to 10 million acre increase in corn acres, we'll probably see a substantial drop in soybean acres. And it's what we call maybe we have to buy some acres, but it's still very profitable to process beans in the world. We know that the caloric uptake in India and also China is very encouraging, particularly for the oil sector, bean oil and palm oil. And as a result of that is it's probably not very popular with the potential smaller crop in South America, smaller acreage in the U.S. to be too short at this time.
Greg Johnson, why did the beans rally Friday?
Pro Farmer came out during the session with their estimate on corn acres, and it was up in the double digits. And so I think it's just that realization that if we, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, you know, the talk was 7 million, maybe 8 million. Now all of a sudden we're hearing 9 and 10, and every once in a while 11 and 12. And with cotton prices low, corn prices high, you know, all of a sudden 10 and 11 million doesn't sound quite as unreasonable as it did 3 or 4 months ago.
And Steve Schilling.
Basically, they've covered all the bases, I think. It is interesting to know, though, that Brazil will probably be gearing up in 08 already. They're going to call it the year of the soybean crop in Brazil for 08. But at this point in time, we're still concerned in this country how many acres we are going to lose to corn and if we're going to have enough beans.
The rally in the bean pit this week pushed the March contract to a high of $7.38, a low at $7.04.5. It's settled 26 and a quarter higher at 7.36 and three quarters. In November, beans were at 7.89 and three quarters. They were up 26 and three quarters from last week. By contrast, the corn settled 3.5 cents lower in the nearby March at 4.02 with a high of 9 and a quarter and a low at 3.94 and a quarter. December contract at 3.97 and a quarter, off 1 and one quarter. Greg, you mentioned the numbers from Pro Farmer. They look like this. On Friday, Pro Farmer put 2007 corn acres between 89.25 and 90.14 million acres. Last year, as a reminder, 78.3. Soybeans between 66.1 and 66.9. And they were down dramatically from 75.53. Tell me how you made assessment when you took a look at those numbers.
I think the market has been talking about those kind of numbers. Now, Pro Farmer may be a little higher on corn than what the average trade guess is, and consequently a little lower on beans. But you have to remember that corn has rallied. It has outpaced beans on a percentage basis ever since August. And so the beans have some catching up to do, and I think that's what's going on right now.
Cooley, can we put 12 million more acres of corn in the ground?
You know, the previous record was 3 million, one from one year to the next. We do have a $100 to $150 per acre incentive to plant more corn. The general feeling is when we go back and look at geographic areas, you know, the big increase in production has to come from Iowa and Illinois because that's the two major keys. The general feeling is Iowa is going to be very aggressive from our point. It could even get up to that 3 million acre increase. The big problem here is, of course, is weather, springtime. And the real footnote here is you better have some beautiful weather if you're going to get 12 million more acres of corn planted over a year ago.
12 million more acres of corn means the planters have got to be rolling or they've got to be a lot bigger, and I don't know that there's been that much machinery bought. And, Greg, you might need a third or fourth pile out there at the Andersons, I think, at the end of the season.
One thing we're picking up is up north, try and buy 80, 90-day corn in Minnesota. It's almost impossible at this point in time because everybody in North Dakota's got it. We're hearing that the spring wheat's probably not going to get planted in North Dakota. They're already planning on planting corn. That's going to pick up acres. Those aren't the high-yielding acres, but there are still going to be acres that are going to be in production, and it'll depend a lot on the weather up there. But a lot of people in our office that are originally from Minnesota, and they've got kinfolk up there, and they're scrambling to find corn in that area because, like I said, it is moving into North Dakota.
Who's going to put the most extra acres in the ground? Illinois, Iowa, some other state? Where do we find all those acres? Minnesota? Where are all the acres coming from?
What's the spring weather going to be like?
Anybody else, I guess?
I think Iowa is the big key here. And, of course, a couple of things. You know, their nights cooled down. They've had wonderful weather in the last couple of years. They seem to like corn on corn a little more so than, let's say, the people in the south half of Illinois and parts of Indiana.
And they already have the ethanol plants in place.
You betcha.
And so they've got a reason, actually, to put the extra acres in the ground, and they've had a reason for at least a year or better.
And, you know, they're getting dividends and payments on some of those ethanol plants, and that helps encourage prosperity in that big state, too.
Strategic Farm Marketing's been talking about ethanol a bit as they've gone out on their meeting series. What do you see?
Well, the hard numbers right now that we're picking up, it's hard to show a profit if you just take the numbers, and I've got them in front of me here. Like nearby profit right now is about 37 cents a bushel of corn, where a month ago it was 2.48, and the peak this summer was over $7.40. And Greg just mentioned a while ago on the way in here, you know, are they really eager to put up an ethanol plant here in Champaign with $4 corn? What happens if crude oil would break down to $40, $45. You know, we got under $50 last week. We're back up to $60 now. But the hard numbers out there right now, from December forward, it is not necessarily profitable.
For the record, I assume he was talking about the Royal plant at that point. We'll see. There are a couple of plants in Champaign County. We won't go any further.
Of course, there's
that.
Always differences of opinion. And, of course, a lot of these plants that we are hearing, and I hear at least 6 to 7 in about a 75-mile radius of Champaign. You know, we do know that there's futures accounts out there, and some of these firms have wonderful storage facilities. And, yes, you can pick a spot market and make things look awful dismal, but it is a very big profit item, and you can rest assured there's lots of money flowing into the development of these new plants.
There's not much reason to worry about ethanol being on the death knell, I would assume, with the politicians lining up behind it, Bush administration saying we want 35 million gallon by, what, 2017, and Durbin and Obama and Lugar out of Indiana, the Republican, and some others lining up at 60 billion gallons by 2030. This looks like it's going to be supported by policy as well as by just the crowd in the world here in the Midwest wanting to put ethanol plants up.
As long as we grow the extra acres and have someone somewhat close to a decent crop, I think you're right. I think politically ethanol is the right thing to do. The question is, what happens if we have a short crop this year and corn goes to $5 or, heaven forbid, $6? now all of a sudden I think we get into this food versus fuel debate a whole lot sooner than what anybody really wants it to be. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. I think we'll get the acres. I think the market has rallied early enough. I think it's done its job. You know, 7, 8, 9, 10 million acres, I think that's entirely possible. But what happens if we have a short crop?
So we need to talk to Ed Kieser, make sure that there's good growing conditions, because you don't want the food fuel versus fuel debate, because voters will win, won't they?
And that's one comment that the USDA has made to the livestock people, and that's a sector that we've kind of forgot about in this whole corn mess. You know, still over 50% of everything we use in the United States goes to livestock feed. So we have to be a little cautious, and they're warning the people to in the livestock sector to pray for a huge corn crop in 07.
Given that, we saw a cattle on feed report that looked like the numbers were pretty decent, and I think, weren't they, on Friday? You saw numbers that looked
about what they expected, and not much change from last year, up a little bit, actually.
Did that surprise anybody very much, that they increased the number of cattle on feed given the price of the input for corn?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah. So
Go price hay out west.
Except that the only place that I've seen that looks like they might be hurting is Tyson Foods, because their income statements were pointing to the fact that they were going to be hurt at least on the income side. But I don't know whether that translates into anything where they're going to cut chickens that they'll be putting in stock.
Well, one of the things that if you follow the livestock sector again, if you look at the last cattle on feed report, there's more and more migrating back to the Midwest now, a la DDGs from the ethanol plants in Iowa. So we might see a migration back towards this way in the Corn Belt just because of available feed.
Paul, what do you see in, what do you hear, I suppose, more than see in the crop insurance side, and how producers are thinking about that as we move through the month of February? This is when their crop insurance program will be set in terms of price, and I suppose they need to watch this month for corn and soybeans both pretty closely.
You know, my general impression is that there's a lot of competition out there in the insurance area. We are also getting the general feeling, as I think the farmers will buy, going in and buy a good coverage of insurance. You know, as far as trying to make money off of insurance, I always get scared when I hear people talking about things like that. It's a tool, and you should use it as such.
It's a risk management tool. And speaking of that, strategic farm marketing is pretty heavy into the insurance sales. What do you tell people when you talk to them at this point?
Look at your revenue. It's just unbelievable numbers that are out there right now that you can lock in. You do the arithmetic on it, for example, and if you look at an in-the-money call and an in-the-money put versus the cost of insurance, it's about 25% less just to buy the insurance and still be protected the upside and downside versus going to the options markets or futures markets for that matter.
Greg, when you take a look at demand for corn, do you see it waning anywhere in the future?
I don't think so. I think it's a case of people, farmers sit on their hands when the market's going down, thinking, well, I'll wait for it to come back. And now we've seen this market reverse and go higher, and the end users have kind of got caught on the other end. And now they're having to come in and, pony up to the keg. So I don't see demand slipping from the feeders yet. We saw back in 95, 96, everybody said, well, once corn gets to 350, we'll cut the demand. People kept feeding that year, and it went a lot higher. It went to 550. It went higher than what anybody thought. And, it's going to take a while. I'm not sure that the demand is quite as elastic as what some people think. I think we're really looking at a pretty inelastic demand curve on corn demand.
Farmers were pretty far ahead in their old crop corn sales. Is there any reason at this point to think that they need to look at additional sales given what happened this week, Paul?
You know, they've really sold the daylights out of corn. And they sold heavy, when corn hit $3 a bushel out of the field. And we had some tremendous margins in the ethanol industry, and people just continued to sell into that and real thinking that there was, a stop point somewhere. Demand is the big thing. We saw smaller crop production, and farmers still rewarded it. My opinion is that the basic feeling is that the farmers have pushed a ton of volume into the marketplace. The elevators have moved $4 corn into the marketplace because of paying for high-priced corn. So I think at some point in time, the brakes on available, cheap, wide-basis corn is going to come to an end pretty quick. And that's one reason why, you know, some people are advocating bull call spreads in old crop and also encouraging bull spreads, buying old, selling new in the corn market.
And then on the soy complex, and I want to go across here with you, and we'll start with you, Paul, on old crop sales. March rallied 26 and a quarter this week. Beans not nearly as sold on the farmer side as the corn is. Any reason that they should reward the marketplace on this rally?
Well, you know, the farmer was a very strong holder of soybeans, and, you know, it is always good to reward that market. And my hunch is that somewhere along the line here at the $7 plus area, depending on your marketplace, you know, you should reward the market. I think there's going to be a lot of people hold off for $8 new crop beans.
I would agree, unless you really need money right now, and the cost of interest, you know, does enter into the equation. But the bean market looks kind of friendly to me, and the funds have jumped on board the corn to the tune of almost 2 billion bushels, but they're not there yet on beans. And there's not near the farmer selling just because of the quantity involved. So I think there's a little bit more upside to go in the beans. I'm not too negative on beans.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that's been said there. The key maybe is to kind of keep an eye on the basis and see if these beans do start moving or if the demand backs off a little bit, because we know we're not going to run out of beans this year.
We'll run through the numbers from the rest of the Chicago Board of Trade very quickly. The March wheat at 472 top, below at 453.5. Their settlement price at 461.25, and they finished down 2.25 for the week. July at 483.25, off 1.75. From the Mercantile Exchange, nearby Feb cattle at 91.20, live cattle at 91.20 on the high. The low at 89.47.5. They settled up 82.5 cents at 91.05. The March feeder cattle at 95.62.5 were up a buck 52.5, and the lean hogs finished the February contract at 65.35, up $1.47.5 with a high of 65.45 and a low at 63.30. The Feb bellies at 103.92.5 were up $3.72.5 from last week. Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois, will join us in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Cold weather continued across Illinois this week with only light amounts of precipitation. Temperatures this week averaged 10 to 12 degrees below normal as we ended January and began the month of February. A series of cold fronts brought increasingly colder air into Illinois as the week progressed. Looking back at January, average temperatures for the month of January were quite warm on the whole, running from 4 to 6 degrees above normal for the state. Precipitation was below normal this week, with only very light amounts scattered across the state. All the precipitation came in the form of light snow or flurries. The heaviest amounts, if you call an inch or two heavy, fell across far northern and northeastern Illinois. The coldest air of the season will knife through Illinois this weekend and early next week. Temperatures will remain well below normal the entire week, and overnight lows will be flirting with zero on a few occasions. The only thing keeping temperatures from plunging well below zero in most of Illinois will be the lack of any deep snow cover. The exception is far northern Illinois, where 3 to 6 inches of snow remain on the ground. The only precipitation to speak of will be some light snow or flurries from time to time as weak disturbances move through the region. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Champaign County, Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Our guest today is Extension Ag Economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Todd.
Thanks for joining us today. How far do you think into the month of February might a farmer go before the crop insurance price is set well enough that they can make an acreage decision and potentially try to cover that if they shift very much?
Well, obviously the insurance price is based on the average for the month. So once we get, you know, about halfway through, it's going to be hard to change that average very much. So I think by the time we're into the second week, they're going to have a pretty good idea of what kind of coverage level they're going to be able to lock in, and looks like that's going to be awfully high this year.
Daryl, when you're looking at this situation and this dynamic price and price potential this coming year, you know, characterizing you as a coach, How would you change the game plan this coming year in some of your marketing than people have done in the past?
Well, I think there are clearly a lot more unknowns this year than even in most years, Paul. I think that means we have to be extremely cautious in terms of pricing the new crop corn and soybeans. I think the good news is, as has been indicated, farmers are going to be able to lock in awfully good protection with the revenue insurance programs. It's going to give them a lot more comfort, I think. It looks like it's really going to be hard to make a mistake this year to get insurance coverage in place. And the question is, do you sell at a high price or a really high price? So I think, you know, small steps take some caution, but looking for an awfully profitable year.
Let me go back and define how you have approached this in the past. Am I right that in general in marketing, when you look at the economics of it, that most the best prices usually come between now and the end of June, early July? Is that generally when you think about marketing a corn crop?
Well, it's a little complicated, Todd. That's often the time when you see the highest price on a spike basis. If you look at monthly averages, you don't necessarily see higher averages, even looking at new crop prices. But your best opportunities, they may be fleeting, but the best opportunities have typically taken place during when there's most uncertainty about the crop. Obviously, this current year is an exception to that.
And so what you were suggesting then to Paul was that it might be, if you're willing to take the risk, it's might be worth the wait?
Well, I think you're going to have so much downside coverage here if you get an insurance program in place that you don't have to be real aggressive pricing the crop. But at the same time, as opportunities come along, you can step in and take advantage of those.
Daryl, I remember talking to you a few months ago when corn was only $3, and you were talking about 7 million more acres, which was very aggressive at the time because most people were talking about 5 or 6 at the time. Now that we've gone to $4, we start hearing the 9, 10 million acre increase in corn. I guess my question is, how elastic is that? In other words, can farmers, if nitrogen prices shoot up over the next couple of months, can that acreage number go back down, or if prices keep going up, will that number keep increasing? Is it really a response to prices, or is that pretty well set now? They've ordered their seed, and whatever it is, we just don't know what it is.
Well, I think a lot of it is the latter, Greg, that a lot of farmers have made their decision. Certainly, the higher price is going to attract a lot of corn acres, but as you know, it ultimately is a relative price that makes a difference. Corn versus soybeans, and I think as long as we see these prices, you know, 2-to-1 soybeans to corn, it's going to be very conducive to a lot more corn acres. I think the thing we're all struggling with is, at this point, is what is a lot, and Paul alluded to this, that when you look at the last 10 years, if you've changed acreage 2 to 3 million a year, that was a big switch. Will farmers really do 10, 12, or more? I guess I'm personally a little skeptical of that at this point.
Well, one of the things, Daryl, we're looking at here is this world economy, and particularly with big switches in production. Do you see any world commodities in the corn or wheat or soybeans that look particularly interesting in your observations?
Well, I think clearly corn is the most interesting because of not so much what's going on in the world economy, Paul, but just because of the ethanol, the biofuels. Looks like politically that's going to be accelerator to the floor type thing, and I think that's going to be the driving force of kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the marketplace, probably going to keep corn well-supported relative to everything else. Likely see world wheat production rebound fairly sharply and probably have the least potential longer term on wheat prices. But the corn is, we're where the action is, I think.
I have a question, and maybe the rest of you might want to answer some of this, too. Have you taken a look, Daryl, at the Bush administration or USDA's proposal from Thursday with a 200,000 AGI, the adjusted gross income on the top side, and the $360,000 total cap, and all of the things that were included, including the vegetable, getting rid of the vegetable restriction. Have you taken a look at it and had any discussions about policy or econ and your first assessments of what that policy looks like?
Well, really not much in depth, Todd. I think, you know, the payment limitation is probably kind of a moot point in the current environment of such high prices, and if these persist, you know, look as they look like they will, then the only payments that producers would be receiving under current programs certainly would be the direct payments. So I think that is kind of a moot point right now, and on the fruits and vegetables, I guess I don't see Illinois producers running out and finding a lot
not.
Of vegetables this year.
Probably not. I don't know whether pumpkins would be worth more than corn at the moment or not. I don't think so, though. How about the 1031 exchange? What's the discussion there? Farmers, would farmers like that or dislike that, in your opinion? Because they would get rid of that. They wouldn't change the tax law, but you wouldn't be able to. Because you'd be able to do the 1031 exchange, but you wouldn't be able to collect payments, payments from USDA on those acres in the future. Would that have much of an impact? You think farmers will be happy about this? And I don't know, maybe the rest of you might chime in on what you hear from farmers about this. Anybody?
Well, you know, that 1031 has a lot of wonderful benefits if a family wants to trade land between the family. And, of course, this would probably send up a red flag. You know, there was a lot of concern about the selling at 1 acre in Chicago and buying 12 acres someplace else or something of that nature. But, you know, it looks like to me that some of this thing is a little bit harsh because some of the good guys even get the trade ground around.
Paula, if they put it in so that you can still collect payments off the 1031, we're going to call that the Cooley Amendment.
hey, Todd.
Yeah?
Blaming the 1031 is a little bit like blaming the thermometer because it's cold or hot.
I agree with you, Daryl. Amen on that one.
I mean, the whole idea is that when you have urban development and a lot of high-priced land, there's a lot of money, and folks are going to invest that in farmland if they want to, 1031 or no. So I think the whole thing is kind of silly.
All right. Thanks much. You know what? We're going to end on that point. We appreciate it. Okay. Daryl Good is ag economist with the University of Illinois. Joined us here on the Commodity Week program today. Now a final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley.
I always like Daryl at an Outlook meeting because he can eloquently end the conversation about as good as anybody I know.
Thanks much, Paul. And Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
As we get corn prices above $4, I think you need to take some of the risk off the table and sell some new crop corn. Hold on to those beans, though. I think they'll be much higher later on.
And Steve Schilling.
I totally agree with Greg. From the risk management point of view, these prices are really hard to turn down somewhat when you can cover your expenses on a minimal amount of acreage.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. That ends this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.